All right, so this is an interesting one for you because this is the first time you're on a podcast.
Correct.
Okay. So for those that don't know, this is Nick, and Nick is fairly new to the team, been here for a few weeks. Nick came from a shop background.
Yep.
You built a lot of cars. You were a lead tech. So he comes with good car skills, which is always good because I really like talking about technical things, and sometimes I feel like I glaze people over, but at least there's somebody else to glaze over with. You know?
Yep.
So it's cool having you here, man.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's nice. So you might, for those people that are listening out there, you may end up in a situation where you're going back and forth in comments or social, different things. You may get Nick. So, be friendly, be nice. When I get home and before I go to bed every night, I probably spend about 30 minutes on Facebook Marketplace praying that I can find some car that I haven't seen from the day before.
We were diving into this and the struggle that it is to get a clean, affordable mm-hmm. JDM car.
Yeah.
And it kind of led into our conversation about
what's
left out there, right?
That's affordable.
Yeah.
Because I think there were a lot of cars that weren't super popular before the pandemic.
Correct.
That now have started to gain a little more popularity here in the States because they have cool pieces on paper.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
What was one of the cars you were starting in with before? You had the
A31 Cefrio.
Okay. I don't know a ton about that car, although I will say that for those that follow like Taylor Ray, he did a really nice job doing a K-swap on one of those.
I did not see that.
Which is interesting because the bulk of those cars were NA, am I right?
Yes. It's very hard. I don't really know if there's any that came turbo that are available.
But a lot of people swap RBs.
A lot of RB25 swaps, right. A lot of RB20 projects out of them, stuff like that.
But anyhow, so so the Cefrio is cool. It kind of reminds me of those, has a little bit of that chaser vibe, yep. Right? But yep. But it has thinner tail lights, a little bit more streamlined.
And it has a very unique headlight assembly.
Yep.
It was like one of the first cars of that style to run a projector headlight.
Mm.
They had supersonic suspension, which is what? It shoots sonar.
Ah, oh, that's sick.
Down in front of the wheels as the car is driving down the road, and will tighten up the suspension based on input from that sensor.
Yo, that's some Japanese stuff that there was a lot of those little things that they tried to do back in the day that that we don't even think about, like a little bit ahead of their time, right? Yep. I think about it with some of the other cars. What you call it, Max, do me a favor. In the Cefrio, go a little bit newer than the A31. There's even some other models that are a little bit newer, I believe, that that you could show some people because I think some of those are really dope. If I'm thinking of the right car, I think I am. But anyhow, so you have those cars, but then you have, because those cars are still really affordable.
There you go.
That's right?
The A32.
Yeah.
So, which is the I-35 here.
Right.
It's the Infiniti I-35.
Right. So those cars, if I remember correctly, like the A31s, they came with an RB20, I think, right?
Yes.
And then a lot of people swap RB25s in them and stuff, yep, like that.
They also came, you could get them with the rear wheel steering. You could get the Tessa system.
Right.
Hikus, obviously, which is the rear wheel steering.
Which is the same type of thing that you would have had in like the GTRs.
Yep. It was in the Zs, the GTRs, and some of the other ones like the Cedric and Gloria, which,
right,
the Cedric was a awesome four-door sedan. Also, right. If you want to pull that up.
Did you like the Cedric?
I like the way they look. Mostly, they have that really cool front end. If you want to pull up, it's a Y33 Cedric.
So like when it comes down to like the Glorias and stuff, those double headlight units and stuff, like I think they're cool VIP cars.
I love to me it looks like a M3 but from Japan. Like it's
yeah.
It looks like kind of like an E36 styling.
What was big with those cars in Japan as they got bigger bodies, same thing with like the Crowns and stuff like that, is they used to do that VIP movement. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yep, 100%.
So it's funny. It's like if you go back to probably like
That one's got VIP curtains in it, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. So if you go back to like 2007, 2008, Falcon was rolling all the way in with a VIP tire. They actually had a tire that would allow the car to make better contact with the ground when it was at more camber. Because that's what those cars were doing, to be able to fit those, you know, 20x10s and stuff in there.
Yeah, Lowenhart wheels and things like that.
Yep. So we had three-piece wheels back in the day, and we were doing it for those cars, and it's kind of interesting. So but anyhow, so I like some of those cars because you get some interesting things. And right on the interest factor, I know we're hopping a little bit off of
Is that a crown? I think that's a crown or a president, right?
Yeah. So I think what's interesting to me is that, like, if you travel down that road just a little bit of that whole VIP things, I know we're kind of a little off base from the affordable cars and stuff like that, but there's some interesting cars that came. They had the Figaro.
Leopard.
Which is like super interesting cars that, like, they make it, like, you look at that car and you're like, oh, that's probably one of those old vintage cars. And they're like, nope, it's like a 99.
Yep. They have really good styling cues, things like that. Right. But you found that a lot with the Japanese cars. I mean, we were talking about the timeless design of the JZX 100, the Chaser. Yeah, 100%. You know, those are a car that you can buy today and it's still, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a Figaro.
That's a Figaro.
Thing is dope. Turbo. Right? It's a little four-cylinder turbo, like a 1.6 liter or something like that, right?
Yeah, and then you got, if you really want to go crazy and stay off that, you can go into like the S, what is it, the S-Cargo, which was Nissan's little, pull that up, Max. Please pull up the S-Cargo, please. It looks like a snail.
They had the snail.
But we're way off on that one, but regardless.
But they had some interesting cars, and some of those cars are still really affordable if that's your cup of tea, right? I like the fact that, like, there are still some cool performance cars, though, that are out there, right? So the Sephiro, I think, is a cool base platform. And like you said, a lot of people swap RBs, RB25s into them. I think the Chaser and Tourer, I mean, the Tourer to me is the one you want.
Well, that's the one that's $35,000, $40,000.
You can find them for high 20s and and low 30s. But like that's the one that car wasn't expensive before the pandemic.
No, and it's gaining traction because you're getting drift guys that are into it. It's 100%. A big drift car, and it does great in that, you know, revenue that because, avenue.
So it comes with a twin turbo 1J, you know, so 1JZ. It comes with, if you get the manual one, it has it's an R154. So it would have been the same as like a Mark III Supra. I hate saying Mark with a Supra, because it's really not
MK3 whatever.
But so you end up getting the same trans. I mean, it's not an amazing trans, but it's not a slouch either.
No. Can handle some abuse.
Right. But they're cool platforms out of the gate, and they look super dope.
Yep.
It's like a Camry on steroids. But I really like the rear, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, for some reason, those taillights in the rear to me are like, maybe it's because there's not another car that we had here in the States that I felt like looked like that.
No, you're 100% right. I would agree. I mean, the closest you have is like an M45, I would say, has like that same square back.
Yeah, I get it.
But
this has that Toyota big body Camry type feel, right? But it takes a body kit like probably one of the best sedans I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, that, you know, that really translates super well. They had a few different years of it as you go older, like to the JZX90s and stuff like that. I think the JZX100 probably is the fan fave, right? There, like, that's so sick.
And, you know, honestly, that car, you get a lot so of that good same four-door Skyline kind of feel,
right? You get the same vibes, right?
Altec, things like that.
And so my whole thing is like, all right, don't get me wrong, everybody will talk about how good a 2JZ is. It is.
Yeah, no, it's a great engine.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't think it comes without some of its flaws. I think everybody seems to glaze over the fact that they're hard as hell to bleed, but that's a whole other story. But a 1JZ, the 1J was a really good engine.
It's a workhorse engine.
Yeah.
So you see it in a lot of different configurations that it's able to handle the abuse that's
absolutely.
It eats it constantly.
Right. I mean, and so a little bit less displacement.
Yep.
2.5 liter compared to 3.
Yeah, 0.5 liters.
But for the most part, I believe the architecture, and for those, you know, Jay-Z fanboys, don't kill me because I'm not, I wasn't. But like, I believe the architecture is very, very, very similar.
They're, I mean, same family, right?
Same, you know, right.
So.
Not right. Well, I'm not telling you the same everything, but there's a lot of architecture there that exists. So, but the engine, those 1Js were known for making really good power. Yep. You know what I mean? So you got with the Tourer version of the Chaser, you got the 1J, you got twin turbos, yep. You got a manual transmission, you had 4 seats to improve the party, right? And some of those cars had some, like, you could get a leather trimmed car. You could get some of these option cars. Honestly, if that car was in an $18,000 window,
it would be affordable.
Well, no, yes, of course it would be affordable. but what I mean is, like, if it was $18,000, I would pick it up for a daily driver, 100%. Knowing that I could throw my kids in the back and it would be super comfortable for them and the car was rad.
Yeah.
Right.
And you would have Toyota reliability.
Right. Absolutely. So, like, I think the hardest part with those cars is, yes, they've gotten expensive, but here's why I think they still make the list.
Okay.
Of affordable, you know, unsung JDM heroes here. Because of what you're getting within that package, think about it. If you're trying to compare that to, you know, even some of the stuff that you're going to get with some of the Supras, and yes, they're not the same car, but you're still getting a lot of car.
For the dollar.
For the dollar compared to what it is. And it does have the JDM thing. There are JDM parts for it. Yep. There is a JDM following for it. And look, I don't care what anybody says. Part of these cars, the Supra was a great car, right? The NSX were a great car. Like, does that mean that we don't have better cars for less money than those cars are going for here in the States today?
No, it's a cult following.
Right. And the reason that a lot of people are attracted to it, the same reason I'm attracted to getting Nismo parts for my 350 or whatever it may be, is because it's just cool. It has this this flavor, this legacy, this history thing, yep. Right? And so you get that with those cars still.
Well, being a big Z guy, we've talked about this. The legacy of the Z is something that once you're part of that culture, it becomes part of your identity in the car culture. You know, you own a Z, you've owned Zs, you know what that passion is.
Yo, I think it's because my wife doesn't get this, right? My wife, I struggle with this with my wife a lot. She doesn't understand why I'd be willing to spend so much money on a GTR. And when I say GTR, I'm not talking about R35. Like, R32, 33, mm-hmm. 34, right? She doesn't understand why. She's like, I don't get it. I don't get it, right? Yeah. And for me, I even say to her sometimes, we joke about it. I'm like, oh, just because, in the middle of the night, sometimes I need a hug. So I am that psychopath that would go outside to the garage and literally just sit in it at night. Like, there's something about the legacy and the heritage of me that I feel like I'm saving, right? I like the fact that, like, if you look at, and I think Nissan does this, I'm going to go out and say that I think Nissan does this absolutely the best out of any company. The amount of legacy and pride that they take and the details that they put in to those legacy cars, right? The cars that have the pedigree, Z platform, GTR platform. I mean, I think they're the two biggest ones. I mean, obviously you could say, S chassis stuff, but that was kind of limited as far as its numbers of years of production, whereas like the Z platform's been around a long time.
69 through now.
Right. And current. So and the GTR platform's been around for a long time too, because they started Skylines.
I know it's not
a GTR. I get it. Don't flame me. But like that Skyline platform that where the GTR branched off of, it's been around for a long time too.
Yeah, actually, I took my kid over to the 50th anniversary of Z and GTR.
Okay.
At the Javits Center. We're here in New York, so that's a common thing out here. But yeah. We took it over there, and it was amazing. We got to see the anniversary edition. They had a bunch of Zs downstairs. They had the GTR 50 there.
Yeah.
So you got to really experience, that culture, that heritage of those cars.
Right.
And that experience as a Nissan fanboy was, great.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to explain that.
No, I get it. Like for me, there's something like, especially now, I think if you get a pristine one or whatever it is, like for me, like when I get into my 350, there's like these little details all over the car that make me feel like, oh, they really cared about what this looked like, right? Like if you open the door, there's this vent that feeds the door that goes into like those BS door vents, yep. Right? And it's, you know, it's louvered. And then it has a little Z in the middle.
Yep.
You know? Like, you find that stuff all over the car.
There's a lot of little Easter eggs on these cars.
Absolutely. But it's done in a way that you're like, well, no, they cared. They wanted that to be instilled without being, like, all up in your face. I constantly feel that I want some of these older JDM cars, not because of what people have to say about them, but because of the fact that I love the historical piece behind them, and I feel like when I own them, because I'm a psychopath, that I'll save that car.
Okay.
I like the idea of, you know, saving and preserving kind of the historical piece that's around it.
Okay.
You know,
so argumentatively though, would you modify that Skyline?
So the question depends on how I got the car.
Okay.
Right? Like, I mean, you know, that to me is a big thing, because when you start talking about like, you know, like, all right, so let's say hypothetically I get an R32 and it's absolutely, because, you know, a lot of those cars are hacked to crap already and a lot of the cars have been modified to no end. So let's say let's set up a few scenarios. I get an R32 that's, the paint's not good. It doesn't have a lot of rust, has a little bit of surface rust here and there. Has a stock engine and it's still, let's say it's not a million miles. Car is straight, never been
but
hit
a used
before.
Car, a used car.
Right. But not molested.
Gotcha.
I try my best to put the thing back to an OE thing, and no, I don't modify it.
So no power level increase, nothing.
No. Well, I mean, I don't want to say that. Like, I would do some bolt-on stuff. And I also think I would spend all the money to try to get some of the Nismo stuff to bring that heritage part into the car, because I think that those become period correct parts. Like, that's the coolest piece of it. Like, well, you could put a Nismo part on an R32, 33, 34, and you might as well just go ahead and say it's a factory part, right? People don't look at that stuff as an aftermarket part. They look at it as an improvement. It doesn't get shunned
especially
away.
if you go with like JDM brands like Mines or something like that, where you're going with
a lot of times, like, right
now you're
fanboys like
value,
us,
you're adding to the value of the
correct
vehicle.
Right, you're putting some of those Japanese tuning house stuff on there, yep. And people are like, yeah, it's period correct. And the biggest company that gets, you know, people really have looked at that is the HKS stuff.
Yep,
it's probably the biggest of the you know, kind of quote unquote Japanese tuning houses that came out with parts, but, you know, it's legitimately, like, when people put that stuff on, and I even have a slight problem with that, but I'm not going to get into it. But yeah, so like, so I think for that kind of thing, if I got a GTR that was already kind of worked a little bit, maybe they've done some things, maybe it wasn't going to be the easiest to put back, but it would be a cool driver, I'd modify that.
Make it like a, you know, cool little fun daily, beat on, go on the weekends and go canyon cruising, that type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have any canyons here, but like, yeah, I know what you mean.
Up on the hills.
Yeah, but like, so I think I could probably take one of the, you know, like one of those cars, and like, I'd probably make the, you know, try to get a lot more, you know, maybe some Nismo parts. I try to clean up the body. I try to make everything, like all the interior, try to put back to a very OE, the best I could get it condition. But I think, you know, as far as the power level, I wouldn't feel bad about, you know, really putting some of the extra stuff on and like actually doing some stuff to the car, because I feel like it's already turned the corner there.
Yep, it's already used to that point. Might as well continue down that road.
Yeah, I mean, or if the car had a fair amount of rust and I was gonna have to repair it, I probably would feel the same way as well. You know, like
put a wide body on it.
No, so yeah, it's tough. There are some really cool R32s, wide body R32s that are like done really well.
Yeah, the Rocket Bunny kits, the Liberty Wall kits.
And yeah,
even down to like, what's the other? Of course, I'm losing my train of thought now.
No, I know what you mean. But there was even some of those, like some of the other Japanese kits that they had. I'm trying to remember, like, Troy would be really good with this. But anyhow, bottom line is, some of those cars look sick. Yeah, that car is awesome.
Yep.
So, you know, I think that, you know, there's definitely a level there. But they're not affordable.
No, they're completely blown out of the budget at this point.
I've tried. Like, I want an R33 really bad. R33 GTR.
Yep. But you're going to get a rear-wheel drive R33 for the price that you would have for an R33 GTR before the pandemic.
Yeah, and I want an R33 GTR.
So then there's no point.
Don't get me wrong. I think that, like, you know, like, I mean, look, if I was getting, like, when it gets into the R34 stuff, I think, like, a GTT is still cool. One, because I think that, you know, the body looks pretty good, even though you don't have the wide body quarters and stuff like that. Like, you know, it's still a good looking body. And that Neo, RB25 Neo, was a good engine.
Yes, they're very good. So I like the RB25 platform personally. Right. Obviously, they have their weak points. They do break, pistons break, things like that. But the Neo did make a lot of revisions.
Right.
And they can make power. The one thing I wanted to touch on, you brought it up and now I'm blanking. Oh, Max, can you pull up a R34 Autech, AUTECH?
You're talking about the four-door ones.
Yes.
Yeah, the Autech stuff is cool. To me,
that's better. I would take that over.
And those cars go for a ton of money.
Oh, you can't get them.
Yeah.
But they're
no, that's not the, that's not it. That's a Stagia. Oh,
that's
a, those are,
that's cool, an Autech Stagia, though.
I know, but they're super cool. I like the Stagias. Like those 260 RS Stagias,
yep.
they are super dope. The problem to me with the Stagia stuff is that, like, they went up a grip of money too. Man, they were super affordable.
Yeah.
You got it for like $12,000 back in the day.
What's the Gallant that you like? The VR4 Gallant wagon. What was that one?
Oh, I don't know if I love it, but you're talking about the Legnum.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that, how's that on price? I have
no, good. So, like, yeah. So, like, jumping back to the pricing thing, right? Like, I think some of the best, you know, best Japanese affordable cars, right? You have the, like you said, the Sephiro, I think, is right up there.
Yep.
I think you have the Chaser Tourer. You know, you were even talking about this the other day, where you're like, hey, what about the VR4s? And I'm like, well, they were here. And you're like, no, not the old ones. Yeah,
not the square bodies.
Right. You're talking about, like, some of the, like, almost mid-90s Gallants that look, you know, that you know, we know them as Gallants here because we never got the VR4s, but they had VR4s there that had, you know, six-cylinder twin-turbo engines, right? But they weren't the same as the 3000 GT engines. They were different engines.
Yeah, they were like a smaller version.
Right.
6A12, 6A13, something like that.
Right. Right. And then kind of to complement that, there was that Legnum, which was the wagon one. And I think it's cool in its thing. I think a lot of those cars are pretty affordable. Some would argue that obviously Mitsubishi didn't catch into that JDM craze as hard as, you know, I'm not talking about Evo 5s. Yeah, they made it. Like, but I'm talking about, like,
but they didn't need to, because the Evo was such a versatile platform that
it was good.
It was racing everything.
Yeah.
Like, there was no need to have a dedicated racer car that was used at each event, because they had it in rally, they had it in JGTC, things like that. So it was all over the place.
But like the Evo 4, like the Evo 4s, Evo 5s, you know, Evo 6s, like. Like, even the Evo 3s, but, like, they already had a good JDM following. So the good clean cars will appreciate in value anyway. So there's those. But, like, you have, you have, as far as affordability, you have, you know, Legnums. You have the VR4s, the Gallant VR4s.
Yep.
I like the fact that what's still affordable, if you're into that type of thing, and it's actually even cheaper than probably some of the pristine ones here, is I've been able to find some pretty good GTOs, which is basically a 3000 GT that we have here.
Now, did that come with all the same, like, active aero, the braking, all that stuff that the later VR4s came with here? Or?
That's a good question. I think the answer is yes, but I wouldn't bet the farm on it, only because I don't know. I do know that the platform's the same, engine's the same. So I think the GTO, but they're still going for a really good price for what it is. Four-wheel drive steering, active aero.
Active aero, dampening. So it had all the same bells.
That was a car that was ahead of its time.
All of them. Like, the 90s was such a cool time for these cars because they all had active aero. They had active exhaust. Z's had active suspension. You find it all over the 90s that these technologies that we're still using now are refined now, like your MagnaRide suspension and stuff like that. There were technologies that were being developed 30 years ago that are in these cars.
Yeah, they were trying to come up with these like little things to like improve the cars, but also to, I think, add some really good selling points, right? Well,
you have to know why you're selling it versus the car next to it.
I guess, especially when you're competing against like 3000 GT, who's going against either a Supra, an NSX, RX-7.
Or the Z.
Yeah. Yeah.
Twin-turbo Z32s were competing right with them.
And Z32 for design wise was a really slick car. I don't know if it ever established the same level as maybe some of the Supras and GTRs.
No, of course not.
But it definitely had the legacy because they raced that car inherently for a long time.
Yep. All throughout the 90s, and then if you go back into the Z31, the 280 ZX, and you just go all the way back, that's where they got their start.
So what other cars are kind of still on the affordable list for JDM stuff?
We didn't touch on, the only thing we haven't really gotten into is any front wheel drive. We've talked a lot about all wheel drive, rear wheel drive. So for everyone else, I had to bring up the Accord Euro R because we did our Type R episode and we touched on it for a split second, but those cars were available with all the bells and whistles. You could get a K-Series depending on what generation. You could get it either auto or manual. Yep. You can even get you could even get all-wheel drive ones depending on the generation.
Because that was basically our version of a body TSX.
TSX, yep. The way through. And what's funny is that you can find them in a nicer trim for less money for a JDM one than you would find a high trim level TSX here.
Right.
From what I was seeing.
Well, so here, the hard part for me is, and Max, is not that, it's actually the, I guess that might have been.
No, that's one of them too. So that was the early one.
There was this one, and then they had the later one, right?
Yep.
The reason we kind of didn't really go too hard into it on the Type R video was because of the fact that car wasn't it didn't really make its worldwide appearance. It didn't end up over here. It ended up being one of those cars that was only available. So if I remember correctly when we were talking about this, that car started in Europe.
And they used it for auto racing, like British touring cars. Yeah,
something like that. And then it was like a year later, I believe they introduced it in Japan.
Okay.
Right? And then it was like, what was interesting about the European Type R was when they brought it into Europe, the engines weren't made in Japan.
Okay, I didn't know this.
I think they were getting them done in like Sweden or Switzerland or some crap like that. And then what ended up happening was I think it got back to Japan. They're like, we can't have a Type R that doesn't have an engine. And all of a sudden now they really went hardcore into, making some over there to be able to make their cars, right? Okay. So I think like you said, the Accord was not one of those platforms that was like super lusted after. Yeah. But it's interesting to see when you put the Type R Heritage in, if you could find any of these cars, that you still can get them from a pretty decent price.
And if Max pulls up the wagon, they even make a wagon one.
Right.
Back to that.
So you know what else I've been looking around? And, I've really been searching a lot for I have this bucket list of cars I want. Right. So people say, sometimes you're looking for this, sometimes you're looking for that. Yeah, I'm looking for it all. Like, I kind of feel like it's like Pokemon stuff. I'm trying to collect them all. Yeah. So,
like that, it's just got
very
such
Stasia
reminiscent. It's got good body lines though, because it carries through the front end all the way back through the profile of the car. You don't get into that uncanny valley like you do with the Stasia sometimes.
So I think that's my biggest problem with the Stasia.
Yeah, it gets into an uncanny valley.
It almost like it goes like this, and all of a sudden, right at the end, it goes into a minivan.
Yep.
You're like, what the hell happened here? Like, where do we lose this, right? I like the fact, like, you get to see it. Like, you go, I mean, I guess it matches.
It's
but
mostly on the R34 conversion, though. If you go down to the R34 conversion, it really does make a glaring difference between the car.
Yeah, the R. I mean,
because you have that front end that is very reminiscent of an R34 Skyline.
I mean, it is.
And then
it just becomes
a minivan. I like them. Don't get me wrong. Me too. But there's just this weird, uncanny valley that takes place during the transition.
I know.
See, that back end does not match the front end.
No. But I've said this on other podcasts when we talked about the Stagia before. Like, that's the only thing that gets me is when you do the conversion. Now, I'll be honest with you, when you don't do the front end conversion, I actually think it probably follows the car more to suit than not.
I fully agree.
Yeah. When you put the 34 front on, that's when I'm like, it's hard because I feel like they chopped the car in half and made two different cars. Yes. Right. But I still think, you know, some of these cars are super dope. Stagia is a super dope car.
Especially the 260 RS.
Well, of course, because you're getting an RB26.
You're getting all the bells and whistles.
Yeah.
But you like, throw the kids in the back.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would rock one in 12 seconds. You know what I mean?
But see, that looks so good as a combination with that front end, with the big openings, and just it fits the style of the car. That boxy, almost, I don't want to say Forester look, but it has that same feel that they all carry through.
Right. Except this one had some business in it. Yeah, no, for sure. But I still think, like, again, there's some good affordable cars here. You have, like, Sephiros, I think, haven't, you know, gone crazy. You have, like you said. Oh, going back to the Accord, though, what I've started to see as I look around is the fact that you have some of the DC2, some of the DC2 Integra Type R's.
Okay.
The Japanese ones, it seems like, yeah, they're 30 grand, but it seems like you can get them for 30 grand. I still think those cars, if you could find a clean enough one for around that window, I still think that's a great value for those cars.
Yes.
Go ahead. What are you thinking? I can see something.
I would rather have an S2000 for that.
I'm not saying. All right.
I know front wheel drive, but I can't justify spending $30,000 on an Integra.
Okay. I hear you, except for the fact that the Legacy in the DC2 is so good, right? The car is such a benchmark car. It's not about how good the car was, but if you like that historical piece, if you like what that is, that's going to be one of those cars that's etched in everybody's video game loving mind forever.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, that is, to me, when somebody says Type R, that is a car that constantly is the one I think about. Now, the only thing I'll say is if you get a real JDM Type R, it has obviously the JDM front end.
Yes.
Not the.
Did those? I think those also came with like power folding mirrors. They had a lot of like cool little bells and whistles that made them different.
I don't know enough about the car. That was the car.
Yeah.
I still think that car looks friggin' dope.
And they are timeless. You know, something like that where you do like a light modification package on it. I think that's No, that's a DC2. But yeah, they have great packages. Like just a little bit of aero, and they're amazing cars.
The interior was really good in those cars. The red, it's just very
Recaro JDM seats or whatever. And
oh, definitely, yeah, just very, you know, red carpet. I mean, very nostalgic of what that Japan thing was all about. You know, what that JDM market was all about, right? I think that's why I like them so much. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you have some stuff in there. And even right now, I think another affordable car that's kind of lumped into that thing is Soras are still well within price for what you get. You know, you're getting a 1JZ. Most of them are automatic, but you can find ones that were manual in the later years
but
that had the 154.
But a 2J is not the end
1,000%.
Of the world. 1,000%. It's not the end of the world.
No,
at all.
Not at all. In fact, I would even argue that I think the CD09 is a way better trans than the R154.
Well, that's just time. At the end of the day, 20 years of metallurgy and technology difference is going to make a difference out of anything.
Okay, but I would even go as far to say, like, yeah, our 154 is like people have been using for a long time to put on projects. We were putting them on there, you know, in 2000 when we were building, you know, these other little swaps and stuff like that.
But they handle torque. I mean, they could take a good beating.
They do, but like you get to that point and then they start to break. right? Like, I mean, at that point isn't too far over making about 400 horsepower. They just start to break.
But you have to have a CD09, because if you go with like a CD03 or CD05,
no, you have to have a CD09.
You're still going into that same ballpark where you're breaking at the same power level.
No, the CD09, but you can get CD09s.
Oh, yeah. You can buy them right from Nissan still.
Yeah. For like $2,200
right?
Yeah,
right out of the showroom.
Like, I can't tell you that I haven't thought about just buying an extra one, putting it brand new. But like, the CD09 has been mated to so many powerful cars in its stock form and done a really great job.
And the super guys love them.
Yeah.
I mean, they really do. And you do a bell housing conversion or a quick change bell housing and you're set.
Yeah. No, it's sick. I agree. Like half these cars you get, you know, if you're going to try to do anything, like don't try to go for the 154s. Definitely go for the CD09s.
Yeah.
Like, and most people have made bell housing adapters at this point. So
there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah, 100%. So, all right. So that's pretty much the cars that I think are still super affordable, like you were saying.
Yeah, if there's any other ones, I mean, we can put them in the comments and always
throw it down below.
I would definitely do a part two on this.
and here's the thing. Help us, not for the content point, help us for the I want to go buy cars thing. Give us some more things here. I promise you, I'm like honestly, a Taurus is high on my list, right? The problem with the Taurus is they picked up some steam as far as the pricing. Yeah. I wouldn't totally negate doing a Sora, but the problem I have with the Sora is just the fact that I think I probably would be more, I think I'd be happier getting one of the US ones that was manual and came with the 2JZ non-turbo. GE block.
Yeah, non-turbo block.
Because to me is like, you know, bolt on a turbo. And people did them for years. I mean, they take a lot of power.
I mean, at the end of the day, they use the NA blocks a lot for building the engines anyway.
100%. So. Absolutely. I've even had people argue about which head they should use. Non-turbo, turbo.
Yeah, I think that comes down to the guys from like Real Street. They know...
You right.
Know, they know the flow dynamics.
Of which heads for which application and stuff
what's
like that.
What's better on the track versus what's better on drag and so on and so forth.
But there still are some JDM cars that are out there that you can get affordably. So like, don't sleep on the ones that are still left, because I promise you they'll probably go up in value. Yeah. Like, I mean, you want a little JDM history in your site, something fun to drive. This will do it. You get a 1JZ if you can find a manual one, you know. I mean, at least you're not dumping your entire life savings into a car to come out with, you know, who knows. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, that's pretty much it for this. You have any other cars, drop them down below. Help Nick and I find some more cars that we would like to buy. And that's it. We'll catch you on the next one.
Have a good one, guys.